Thank you for that very creative image, Elder David. I want to sing us a little chorus, one that we're familiar with, because we want to exalt Yahweh even above what the subject of matter is going to be. And I will tell you, I had mentioned to Elder David, I'm going to try to spiritualize this as much as is possible. But I want to tell you something else too. When you read the breadth of the scriptures, you know, we read there in the Nevi'im that Yahweh says that he would do nothing but what he wouldn't first show his prophets. And so, you know, before you judge and say, oh, I don't think this is particularly relevant, well, we live in a time of relevancy. And, you know, I can remember reading in the Brit Hadashah where the apostle says, I tell you these things before they come to pass. And there's a reason why we need to be told certain things before they come to pass, so that we don't faint. And the scripture says that if we faint in the day of adversity, our strength is small. And so we're going to be tested. We're going to be tried. We're going to experience trouble. That's a part of counting the cost. I received a letter this last week from a man that we immersed in Kansas back in July, I believe it was. And he's going through some difficulties, but he has got a very good attitude. Trouble that he never thought he would experience, particularly with family members. And what I wrote to him was, I said, there's an interesting thing. When you're born again, you become set at variance with, at enmity against, and contrary to, and you'll find yourself unequally yoked, even with natural family. A man's foes will be them of his own household. So it's a time to lament? No, it's a time to rejoice. It's time to rejoice that you can begin to experience some of the same sufferings that our master experienced, because we're not exempt from experiencing trouble. And this subject we're going to be talking about today spells trouble with a capital T. So I'm going to be giving you some information. I did a lot of research on this. And anyway, but before we do that, we want to give praise to our Heavenly Father. Thy loving kindness is better than life. Thy loving kindness is better than life. My lips shall praise thee, thus will I bless thee. I will lift up my hands in thy name. I will lift up my hands in thy name. I will lift up my hands in thy name. My lips shall praise thee, thus will I bless thee. I will lift up my hands in thy name. The psalmist wrote that with our hands we lift up our hearts unto him. Because this is not a gesture of pride. It's a gesture of humility. I want to begin by reading a collage from the scriptures. Really a paraphrase. And I'm taking this content from Isaiah chapter 14 and Ezekiel chapter 28. And it is actually speaking about Ha-Satan. But I think that you can get the implication and the inference as we proceed through the message today. For thou hast said, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of Eloah. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like Elyon, the Most High. Thou thoughtest that ye were all together, such an one as I. But how art thou perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created till iniquity was found in thee? I will cast thee as profane, and I will destroy thee. Thine heart was lifted up because of thy beauty. Thou hast corrupted thy wisdom by reason of thy brightness. I will cast thee to the ground. I will lay thee before kings, that they may behold thee. Thou hast defiled my sanctuary by the multitude of thine iniquities. We are his sanctuary. Therefore will I bring forth a fire from the midst of thee. It shall devour thee, and I will bring thee to ashes upon the earth in the sight of all them that behold thee. All they that know thee among the people shall be astonished at thee. Thou shalt be a terror, and never shalt thou be any more. How art thou cut down to the ground, brought down to the sides of the pit, thou which didst weaken the nations, that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness, and destroyed the cities thereof. Yahweh Tzavaot, Yahweh of hosts, hath sworn, saying, surely as I have thought, so shall it come to pass, and as I have purposed, so shall it stand. We can glean from the 14th chapter of Yeshayah and the 28th chapter of Ezekiel that he's speaking here about HaSatan. You know, in the beginning, he was the anointed cherub, right? Full of beauty and brightness, the crowning of all of Yahweh's created spirit beings, with the exception, perhaps, of Yeshua. These words prophesy the devil's work toward deceiving peoples everywhere, beginning with Kava, the mother of all living, in Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden. And as well the devil's end, never shalt thou be any more. Then we read in Daniel chapter 12, verse 4, a portion of this verse with which all of us are familiar. It says, and I'll read the entire verse, but thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. You turn the page to Hosea chapter 4, verse 6, and you read this. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Exegetically, that word knowledge there is H1847 from the Strong's Exhaustive Concordance. It's da'at. And it means knowledge, also means cunning. And I submit to you that the knowledge in Daniel chapter 12, verse 4, is not necessarily the same knowledge that we read in Hosea chapter 4, verse 6. First of all, I will tell you, I think it's very interesting the way it is written. In Hosea 4, 6, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Yahweh here is making a distinction between all peoples, because it is certain that not all peoples are his people. We read there in Ephesians chapter 3, verse 9, the apostle Shaul said, he had come to make all men see or understand what is the fellowship of the mystery. And I always like to capitalize that word mystery. In Psalm 25:14, we read these words. The secret of Yahweh is to them that fear him. To them he will show his covenant. I like to always conjunctivize the word secret and mystery and capitalize both words because I understand that to mean he. Yahweh is both secret and mystery, and he chooses to reveal himself to whomsoever he would. I've said this before. Miners dig deeper. Those that would see the works of Eloah, the scripture in the psalm says they go down, They do business in ships in great waters, in the depths. There they see the work of Elohim. How much of Yahweh do you want? Saul also wrote in the Ephesians chapter 3, he said he had come to make all men not only to see the mystery or the fellowship of with the mystery, but also to make all men understand that they might comprehend the length and the breadth and the depth and the height of the fullness of Yahweh. And that's the business that with which we need to be concerned with. Because this is the generation that is spoken of in Daniel chapter 12, verse 4. So with respect to our present inquiry, I would submit to you, as I said before, the knowledge shall be increased is not necessarily the same as my people perish or are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Now, this same individual of whom we spoke of earlier during the Bible study sent me something a month or two ago I thought was very interesting and actually was the inspiration for this particular message. It is an artificial intelligence intrusion. So I will tell you, you're going to find a little humor in some of this, but I trust you will also find some information and some admonition. The word admonition means warning. We read there in Acts chapter 20, the apostle Saul spoke to the elders of Ephesus. They were meeting in Miletus on the Mediterranean Sea coast. And he said, I have not shunned to declare all the counsel of Yahweh to you. I've held back nothing that was profitable to you. And that's what this pulpit stands for. Shunning not to declare all the counsel to the extent that we know the counsel. And not keeping back anything that is profitable for you. You know why? Because we are on a great enterprise, Dillard, called salvation. Sanctification. Called out, separated from all that is the rest of the world. Distinguished rather than blending in, standing out from all that is the rest of the world. So, on ordering a pizza in 2023. Caller. Is this Gambini pizza? Google. No, sir. Google bought Gambini last month. Do you want your usual, sir? Or may we suggest a pizza with ricotta, sun-dried tomatoes and olives on a whole wheat gluten-free crust? After all, your cholesterol is not very good, sir. Caller. What? You know me? And how do you know about my cholesterol levels? Google. We cross-referenced your phone number with your medical records, and we also have the result of your blood test for the last 7 years. Caller, I take medication for my cholesterol. Google, you haven't taken your medication regularly. According to our database, you last purchased 30 Plavix and 30 Lipitor caplets from Centerwell Pharmacy 4 months ago. Well, I bought more from another pharmacy. Google, that doesn't show on your credit card statement. Caller, I paid in cash. Yeah, I have other sources of revenue. Google, sorry, but according to your bank statements the past 4 months, you haven't any debits or withdrawn enough cash to cover your medication expenses. And besides, undeclared income to the IRS is against the law. Caller, enough already. I'm fed up with Google, Facebook, Twitter, WhatsApp, TikTok. I'm moving to an island without the internet, the World Wide Web, Wi-Fi, TV, or smartphones. Google, I'm sorry, sir, but first you'll have to renew your passport. This actually appeared in the Missouri Checker Association blog of November 2023. A few days ago, there convened an electronic show in Las Vegas, Nevada. the focus of which I am told was on this very subject, if we may, in scriptural terms, of knowledge shall be increased, that is to say, AI and you. We are living in a time of exponential increase in knowledge, and may I say, very much opportuned by people, including you and me, who have, to one degree or another, surrendered what was once thought personal and confidential to impersonal and non-confidential institutions. We do this through applications for credit debit accounts, purchase of securities and insurance, contracting of home mortgages through lending institutions, and consumer financing of durable goods like automobiles and trucks, filing of income tax returns with tax preparation accountants, use of medical services provided by clinics and hospitals, purchase of cellular and digital services, and there may be and probably are other avenues through which we voluntarily provide what was once thought personal and confidential to impersonal and non-confidential institutions. And while we talk about living off the grid and below the radar, doing so requires skill, sacrifice, innovation, and initiative with which most of us are not well acquainted and neither resolved to both learn nor employ. Why? Because we live in a comfort zone. And to do these things that would disrupt or disturb our comfort zone are not at all very desiring. So though we talk about and complain about too many people and their institutions knowing too much about us, we continue nevertheless to feed these many impersonal and non-confidential people and their institutions with what's personal and confidential. I'll give you an example. At our senior companion meeting, we had, when was it, Mom? 18th of this month? Week ago, Thursday. I received with my little paycheck, and it was small. At $4 an hour, you ain't going to get rich, I tell you. But I'm not doing it for the money. I received notice that I was nominated as the senior companion for the month of March. And in that was a whole list of stuff I was supposed to provide the coordinator, you know, name, date of birth, and, you know, brothers and sisters, and all, just a lot of personal information, which was going to be published together with my picture in the Rolla or the Phelps County Focus and the St. James News Leader newspapers. And I thought to myself, I ain't going to do it. Too many people know too much about me the way it is. Too many people know too much about you the way it is. And so this is something that I have control over. So I made the trip to the courthouse, to the third floor, to the senior companion office, and told the coordinator that while I appreciated their nomination of me as the senior companion of the month, I was going to decline, and I told her why. No argument. She understood. And I told her why, hoping that perhaps they might modify some of this procedure, you know, because there may be other people like me, old codgers, geezers, you know. Let me tell you something. Last year, I quit counting at 312. I blocked more than 300 phone calls last year from people wanting to sell me Medicare Advantage plans or to solicit a contribution to a charity. The previous year, and I expect it's going to be proliferated because this is an election year, you know, 2 years ago in 2022, what was it? It was midterm elections. It calls from prospective candidates for political office or their whatever, you know, their committees. Already this year, I've got a running start. I haven't counted how many I've got this month. Blocking these phone calls from area codes that I have never heard of. Too many people knowing too much about my business, and to the extent that I can, I live below the radar. I don't even have internet. That's one of the reasons why. I do not want to be troubled. I value my privacy to the extent that I can. And I want to encourage you to do exactly the same thing. You do not have to stand out to everybody. You do not have to make yourself a marketing vehicle. You can make some changes in your lifestyle, and it will require changes in your lifestyle. You say, why? Well, I'll tell you why. The adversary is very, remember the word knowledge? Cunning. Many running to and fro, knowledge increasing, cunning, craftiness. We read about it in Ephesians 4, the sleight of men. I'm here to warn you, to prepare you for your finals. Finals? Oh yes, we are all going to stand before the judgment seat of Yeshua HaMashiach and give an accounting. Yes. One of my senior companion clients, a shut-in who gets out only to see his doctor, was commiserating with me. I'm going to give you some examples here so you understand what I'm talking about, because we're talking about this subject. Was commiserating with me not long ago that he likes to watch old 1940s movies. And he likes to, that's fine, he's 73 years old. And he likes to review these car shows, you know, all over the country. And so he boots up his computer and Roku comes on and they already know what he likes to see. So guess what they do? They provide him with a menu of car shows that have appeared all over the country, recent car shows, and old 1940s movies. And if he changes his viewing habit one little bit, like he likes to watch Matlock on television, one program now, and he's programmed to watch Matlock, so that also appears. You know what I'm talking about. They know what you like to view. My wife shops at Kroger. She's got one of these shopper's cards, you know, and gets a discount. Every month she gets coupons. And guess what? The coupons she gets is predicated upon what she had purchased before. They know about her shopping habits. Another one of my senior companions, whom I was taking to a medical appointment on the 11th of this month, en route, asked me if I could stop by CVS and pick up her prescriptions for her while she was seeing the doctor. Well, that's what I do. I do those kinds of things. She said that two of the three were covered by her insurance, but was uncertain about the third, whether or not there would be a copay, and she was going to provide me with some money just in case, you know. But she thought, well, we're driving through Rolla noon-hour traffic, and you ain't not seen nothing. I mean, it's like St. Louis and Columbia, because you get on 10th Street, and you got the university here, and I'll guarantee you every one of those 7,000 students at the 10 Missouri S&T has got an automobile, I think, and noontime. So we're traversing the three-mile trip from her home to Phelps Health to the medical office building. She's trying to get through to CVS. So let me tell you, because she put it on speakerphone so I could hear all this. And I've had that same experience myself. And you have as well. So she dials the number, or actually punches in. Actually, she says, Google, get me CVS. She didn't even have to, she don't even look for it. She, you know, it does it automatically. It's part of the AI deal, okay? This computer-generated female voice, very seductive too, may I say, then proceeded to ask security questions. The first is her date of birth, then her name, followed with a menu of six choices, and went through it pretty rapidly, which asked whether she was a medical provider, a patient, information concerning the, if she was wanting information concerning the availability of COVID, influenza, or other vaccinations, information concerning any prescription orders that were pending, information concerning her prescription order costs, or whether she wanted to talk to a pharmacist. That was the one she chose. She presses the appropriate number on her phone, which was number six, to speak with a pharmacist, which next activated, again, the female computer-generated voice to list a submenu of more choices. Again, she presses the appropriate number on her phone's keypad, only to get something like this familiar response. Thank you for calling CVS Pharmacy. Your call is very important to us. Please stay on the line and your call will be answered in the order it was received by the next available customer service representative. Your approximate wait time is however many minutes. Okay. We're almost at the hospital by now. Then, looped, badly distorted elevator music. Punctuated with a computer-generated female voice advertising some service of the pharmacy and urging the VIC, which stands for the very important caller and not the volunteer inmate chaplain at your local prison. To stay on the line, a customer service representative would be with you shortly. When we get to the medical office building at Phelps Health, the badly distorted elevator music was still playing, punctuated with a computer-generated female voice advertising some service of the pharmacy and urging the VIC, again, the very important caller and not the volunteer inmate chaplain, to stay on the line that a customer service representative would be with you shortly. Oh, and by the way, when the computer-generated female voice directs you to make your selection on the menu, this I know from experience because I used to have to deal with this with my mother. Same deal, ordering medication over the, you know. Make sure the dog is muzzled, the baby's not crying, that you need to cough, sneeze, sigh deeply, burp, or flatulate. Make sure the doorbell doesn't ring, because if it does, the computer-generated female voice will say, "I'm sorry, I didn't understand your response," at which she'll start the menu or sub-menu or sub-sub-menu all over again. I've had that experience. Annoying. Aggravating. AI and you. Harmless, you say? Yes, but would you consider with me that this is something we don't even hear about anymore. At the turn of the century, I picked up booklets at truck stops when I was delivering that advertising magazine dealing with Agenda 21 and the New World Order. Hey, we're here. We are a quarter century into the 21st century. We're here. Nobody talks about it anymore. Hardly ever hear that Agenda 21. New World Order? Well, maybe a little bit, but you know. People have become so acclimated to it because it's such a subtle, cunning thing. It takes you unawares. That's the ploy of the adversary. Oh, this gets worse. Let's start out with a definition of AI. AI is a field of study that inquires into the philosophy of the mind. In other words, how you think. And the philosophy of computer science. I didn't know computer science had a philosophy, but my source says it does. In which research is directed toward developing artificial neural networks inspired by the design of the human brain, by way of machines and software that replicate and even excel human capacities to reason logically, to practice ethics, consciousness, epistemology. That's an interesting word. Epistemology means it's the study of the nature of knowledge with reference to its limits and validity. It's a whole discipline in itself. To solve problems, to make decisions, to process language, to recognize, interpret, and simulate human feeling, emotion, mood, free will, intellect, elements, by the way, which comprise what we know as the soul or the being, and which Yahweh has reserved to himself. You see where this is headed? To provide facial and speech recognition to support robotics. The philosophy of AI attempts to answer whether a machine can act intelligently and solve any problem that a person can by thinking, whether human intelligence and machine intelligence are the same, and there's work in that area. It's called transhuman. We'll get into that too in a little bit, transhumanism. Whether the human brain is essentially a computer, whether a machine can have a mind, mental state, feeling, and consciousness in the same sense that a human can. To accomplish these objectives, AI draws upon psychology, linguistics, philosophy. You see, it's an interdisciplinary science, neuroscience, cognitive science, and other human intelligence disciplines. But AI is not a recent invention of man's imagination. Let me share something with you. Back in Bereshit chapter 6, Genesis chapter 6, verse 3, Yahweh looked upon the face of his created order, and this is what he discovered. And this was his conclusion, that the imagination of men's hearts was only evil continually, that they had corrupted the entire earth. And so what did he do? Well, you know what he did. The next three chapters are all about that great flood. Wiped it away, right? Started all over again with Noah. Four generations later. I know, I've counted. Four generations later. In Bereshit chapter 10, also four chapters later, Nimrod, mighty man. He was a great hunter, right? A great builder, too. Got his people together in the valley of Shinar and said, you know, this is a good thing we've got going here. Let's build ourselves a tower whose top may reach up into the Shamayim. Maybe a little higher than the World Trade Center that fell back about 22 years ago. Yahweh, Isaiah chapter 40, 22 says that he sits upon the circle of the earth. He come down and he looked and he said, now I know there is nothing restrained the imagination of men what he hath imagined to do. Yahweh made that conclusion way back 2 millennia before Yeshua's first advent. 4,000 years ago, Yahweh made that conclusion of man. Nothing restrained his imagination, what he has imagined to do. As early as 1936, 88 years ago, Alan Turing, a British mathematician, proposed that a machine could, in principle, perform calculations. During World War II, he was instrumental in cracking German military codes, and after the war, worked on a project to build the first British electronic digital computer, suggesting in 1950 that machines could be made and show intelligent behavior. By 1956, AI had made its debut on American college campuses, establishing itself as an academic discipline at Hanover, New Hampshire's Dartmouth College, one among the Ivy League schools. Early on, enthusiasm by academics generated a lot of funding, but glitches in research and development plagued the industry for many years, almost 30 years, as a matter of fact, with a subsequent loss of sufficient monetary support to maintain research and advance development in the science. Too bad it had not. Too bad it found a resurgence. Early researchers developed algorithms that imitated step-by-step processes that humans use in reasoning logical deductions. But the next 30 years saw a seesaw of AI flourishing, then languishing, until the late 1980s and early 1990s, during which methods were developed for employing probability by looking at statistics for any area of inquiry. The big break for AI came, however, in 2012, 12 years ago, which witnessed a resurgence of interest and funding by government, industry, and higher education as computer hardware improvements facilitated faster computers, cloud computing, and access to large amounts of data. There is a data miner near you. The year 2017 saw further advances in computer technology that gave rise to what's been called the AI Spring. You've heard of the Arab Spring, right? The Arab Spring of the 2020s, with companies, universities, laboratories overwhelmingly based in this country, pioneering significant progress in AI. But in advancing science and finding solutions for serious problems, AI, like powerful technology in the hands of eager technologists and engineers whose abandonment of sound judgment has produced unintended consequences and risks. In response recently, a new discipline has emerged in an effort to check and regulate the output of AI technology. Some years ago, I coined a phrase in here. I called it technolatry. Here's another new one for you, technocracy. Did you catch that? Technolatry, technocracy, not theocracy. Technocracy. Technologists were summoned to factor in ethics. That's got a new name too. It's called computational morality or artificial moral agents into the equation because the technology employed to acquire data now had the capacity to intrude into privacy concerns. For example, in order to build speech recognition algorithms, millions of private conversations were recorded by contractors who listened to and then transcribed them, raising the question from what is known to what is being done with what is known. You will recall a few years ago, there was an NSA contractor in Utah. You know what the old common adage, one man's whistleblower is another man's traitor? Have you ever heard that expression? Andrew, I can't think of his last name. Snowden. Found asylum in Russia. They were glad to receive him. The United States for a long time attempted to extradite him back to this country. As far as I know, they've not been successful, and I've not heard about Andrew Snowden for a long time. But he blew the whistle on what the NSA was doing. The National Security Agency? Doesn't sound like we're so secure after all, does it? In the wake of AI. For this reason, techno-ethicists. Techno-ethicists, this is a new word, isn't it? Are propagating and have sought to improve standard behaviors and limits on machine intelligence capabilities in four main areas: respect the dignity of individual people, connect with other people sincerely, openly, and inclusively. I don't like that word inclusively because I know what that suggests. You know, like the DIE deal, diversity, inclusion, equity. They don't say it that way. They say diversity, equity, inclusion, because they know, like I know, that DIE spells die, right? So we don't want to use that acronym. Let's change it around to DEI, not DIE. Care for the well-being of everyone. Protect social values, justice, and the public interest. Respect, connect, care, protect. A 2022 Ipsos survey revealed that though attitudes toward AI varied greatly by country, this was a little more than a year ago, 65% of Americans, why America? Because this has been pioneered largely in this country and it's proliferated. The technology has proliferated more in the United States than any other country. 65% of Americans questioned whether products and services using AI have more benefits than drawbacks. A 2023 Reuters Ipsos poll found that 61% of Americans agree that AI poses risks to humanity. Another 2023 poll by Fox News found that 76% of Americans thought it important for the federal government to regulate AI. Increasing awareness and concern over the implications of AI intruding into people's activities of daily living in medicine or nursing, it's called ADLs, may have provided the impetus for the first global AI safety summit to convene in the UK in November of last year, with 28 countries participating in discussions regarding the near and far term risks of AI and the possibility of instituting regulatory frameworks to manage the challenges and risks presented by artificial intelligence. AI has been shown having the capacity to undermine an individual's critical thinking by leading them into what are called filter bubbles. Now, I'm talking about things here, I don't even know what I'm saying altogether. I don't know for sure what a filter bubble is, wouldn't know one if I saw one. But I have an idea what it is. That is, using internet platforms to deluge users and subscribers with content that proliferates misinformation. Oh, in recent presidential campaigns, haven't we heard this? Fake news? Fake or true? Conspiracy theories? And extreme partisan content with the anticipated outcome that people will distrust institutions, the media, and Big Brother. Biased algorithms that can be programmed into machine intelligence can bring serious harm in terms of discrimination to real people in the delivery of medical services, finance, recruitment for employment, credit applications, housing, and even policing. Well, I have to tell you this. I know a little bit about it, not a whole lot. But in recent years, within law enforcement agencies, there has been an increased emphasis on what they call community policing. It's an interesting term, community policing. Concerning employment, AI has found residence in and made significant incursions in computerized robotics, with the result that not only menial repetitive tasks can be accomplished in the workplace, but also AI has been awarded a seat at the table in corporate boardrooms.
Can you imagine rubbing elbows with a robot as you're in a corporate boardroom about to make earth-changing decisions concerning your company? AI is particularly useful to authoritarian governments. Smart spyware using face and voice recognition to effect widespread surveillance. Not long ago, my wife and I were walking across our Walmart parking lot, and we saw this thing hovering in the air over the parking lot. Well, it was a drone. Well, what was it doing? Was it some kind of security measure that they had, you know, in place within their security protocol? I don't know. What's a drone, you know, hovering around the parking lot? Terrorists, criminals, and rogue states can use weaponized AI. It's got a name to it, lethal autonomous weapons to advance digital warfare. In 2013, more than 50 countries were reported to be researching battlefield robots that had the capacity to locate, select, engage human targets without human supervision. Scary! Especially dangerous as a weapon of mass destruction, and moreover, difficult to identify who would be accountable. Machine learning AI can dispense with tens of thousands of toxic molecules over population centers in a matter of hours or even minutes. It is argued that AI may become so powerful that humanity may irreconcilably lose control of it. Physicist Stephen Hawking, you've heard that name probably, suggested that would spell the end of the human race as we know it. Not so far-fetched, perhaps, as sci-fi commonly presents a computerized robot possessing human-like sentient awareness and becoming a malevolent character. Star Wars comes to my mind. And that came out, debuted in 1977 or 76. Nearly 50 years ago. Last year in 2023, many leading AI experts issued a joint statement saying that mitigating the risks of human extinction from AI should be a global priority alongside societal scale risks such as pandemics and nuclear war. So, I mean, this has been elevated to that level. So, what does the future hold? Now we're going to get into a little bit of a spiritual discourse. Superintelligence, far surpassing that of the brightest and most gifted human mind. Maybe even machines merging with humans into cyborgs. Transhumanism at its best, already a figment of sci-fi imagination and invention, that are more capable and powerful than even AI or HI, human intelligence. Perhaps an AI technologist near you, even now, is, Perhaps an AI technologist near you, even now, is pondering the next question to be asked. Do androids dream of electric sheep? No, you didn't catch that, did you? Should I say it again? Do androids dream of electric sheep? No, we need not wonder what the future holds. The unrestrained imaginations and inventors of science fiction have already provided the answer in venues of motion pictures that have employed cinematographics and video games that assign the supernal working of Ha-Satan, presented in humanoid-like creatures which manifest all power and signs and lying wonders, right out of 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, that surpass even the limits of human ingenuity to conceive and execute. We need not wonder either the disposition of the Sovereign Supreme, or the Supreme Sovereign, whose word has affirmed in one place that marvelous are his works, and that near the top and second of his created order, Yahshua, the firstborn, with man being created for the purpose of having become an heir and co-heir with him of the kingdom, as that creature whom he has fearfully and wonderfully made, whose spirit of his mind can be renewed and transformed from the world that is, to become conformed into the image of Yahweh's dear Son. We need not wonder the disposition of the Sovereign Supreme, whose word no fewer than 10 times, I'm going to give you these scriptures because you can look at it for yourself, 10 times in the Nevi'im, in the prophets, Yahweh says, I am and there is none beside me. Here are the scripture references, most of them from Isaiah. Chapter 43, verse 11. Chapter 43, verse 11. In chapter 44, verses 6 and 8. Verses 6 and 8 in chapter 44. In chapter 45, verses 5 and 6. In chapter 45, verses 5 and 6. And 21, verse 21 too. Chapter 47, verses 8 and 10. Chapter 47, verses 8 and 10. And then in two of what we would call the minor prophets, Hosea. Hosea chapter 13, verse 4. Hosea 13, 4. And Zephaniah 2:15. Zephaniah 2:15. In the which Yahweh declared, I am and there is none beside me. But you know what? Man is trying to change that. Yes. This will serve perhaps as much an admonition as a prophecy that in these perilous times and at this time, technology is rapidly desensitizing. Let me tell you something that Pope Francis said early in his papacy. I read this as a headline in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I couldn't tell you what year it was. It was early in his papacy. Social media has made people less social. Spoken by a septuagenarian who is a cleric. What an observation. Social media has made people less social. I have relatives, I am sad to say, and it grieves me, that unless I face chat with them, I don't have any communication with them. Well, I don't have internet, so I don't face chat. So I do what, what I do. I send them postcards, you know, little notes on and so forth, little brief things, you see. I don't get any response. It saddens me to have near relatives say, well, if you'd have the internet, I could face chat you. But you can't take the time to punch my number in your cell phone and give me a call. But you can take the time to text or to email me, but you don't give me the pleasure of hearing your voice, of being able to sense where you are in this world, whether you're in trouble, whether you're joyous. You understand what I'm saying? Many years ago, I knew a guard. She had been a sergeant in the Mountain View Police Department, but then she left that position, became a guard at a creamery in Mountain Grove. And when I was delivering papers, I'd have to go through her guard check. You know, they check out all the vehicles that come and go. And I got acquainted with this lady, and she mentioned to me, well, while we were sitting there, actually, visiting, her cell phone went off, and I don't remember whether it was a son or a daughter, but was trying to communicate. And she says, I have told him or her, I don't remember the gender of the child anymore, that if they don't want to talk to me, then I'm not going to text them, you know. And I know people that way. They won't talk to you on the phone if they can't text you. They don't, Isn't that a shame? So whatever you think of Pope Francis, he spoke a truism here. And may I say, even though it's not a matter of faith or morals particularly, he did speak, what is that thing that the popes claim to have? Infallibility. He spoke infallibly there, for sure. Social media has made people less social. It's all right. If you don't want to pick up your phone and call me, fine. But I ain't going to take no text message, and I don't text. Don't even know how. Don't want to learn. Boy, you are, kind of. Yes, I am. And if there's no sin in it, I'll say I'm proud of it. I'm old school. I'd like to say, well, you should be too, but that's where you decide. Yes, yes. Technology, rapidly desensitizing, then dehumanizing what he intended in the beginning, should be the crowning of his created order. So I'm almost done. Oh, you're so glad. We're so glad to hear that. So why have we presented this treatise on AI? I'm going to ask this question three times. I'm going to give you three answers. We have done so because, and when I say we, please understand, I didn't collaborate with Elder David or Elder Tom on this. I collaborated with the real Kakadesh. Anytime I use first person plural we, it will be myself and the higher authority. I'm not bragging. I'm just telling you that's the way it ought to be. You too, Elder David and Elder Tom, when you speak with authority, we say, you read the epistles. The Apostle Paul oftentimes used first person plural when he spoke. Now, Yeshua didn't. He didn't have to. He was the sovereign authority. We've done so because more often than not, we conduct life unconsciously. Talk about you and me. We don't even think about it. It's just become a part of life. And with abandon, unconsciously doing activities of daily living without regard to whether or not we are glorifying the Creator and Supreme Sovereign of the universe, or exercising a free will that is set at variance with, at enmity against, and contrary to His will, even our sanctification. I know life. It's hard. I struggle too. I appreciated the honor of a nomination. But I wouldn't appreciate having my name and my picture and, you know, what I've done in my life, you know. I mean, because they want to know, what have you done with your life, you know, and you're supposed to exalt yourself. Well, that's forbidden by Scripture to begin with. So people can come around, slap you on the back, pump your hand, give you a big warm fuzzy hug. I don't need any of that. Not from the world. From you, yes, but not from the world. So why have we presented this treatise on AI? This is the second question. We have done so that we might become consciously appreciative that Yahweh has called us to be a peculiar, called out, and separated people. Do you like those adjectives? A peculiar, called out, and separated people to Himself. Even if that peculiarity, that separateness, should mean that we are made a spectacle. These are scripture phrases. I'll give you the reference. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 9 and 13. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 9 and 13. And Nahum. Oh, we hardly ever hear from Mr. Nahum, right? Nahum chapter 3, verse 6. Nahum 3, 6. He's called us to be a peculiar people, a called and separated people. Even if that peculiarity, that separateness, should mean that we are made a spectacle to the world, defamed as the filth of the world, the offscouring of all things, vile as a gazing stock. Question. Are we worthy to bear those credentials? Are you willing yourself to become a spectacle, defamed as filth, the offscouring of all things, vile, a gazing stock? That's the definition of a peculiar, called out, separated people. 3. Why have we presented this treatise on AI? We have done so because the time and season during which we live is perhaps even now, we've heard this for years, on the cusp of the culmination of the age. And perhaps also to prepare us that we should not be ignorant of the next technological knowledge shall be increased that has the capacity to first, and all some of us have already experienced this, ensnared us, and then afterward pierced us through with many sorrows before drowning us in perdition and then destruction. Right out of the scripture, 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 10 and 9, in that order. To ensnare you, to ensnare you, and then afterward pierce you through with many sorrows before being drowned in perdition, then destruction. Now this, I wrote this as a tract yesterday morning. It'll appear as a meditation down the road, probably in the year 2028, because that's how far I am right now. Well, brother, I'm telling you, I'm 77 years old almost, and I trust that this will continue even after I'm gone the way of all the earth. And so I am preparing myself. Dateline, 27 January 2024. You'll read about 4 years from now. Savvy cyber thieves taking advantage of artificial intelligent networks overcome firewalls that should have thwarted phishing attacks. That's P-H-I-S-H, not F-I-S-H. On digital accounts and make off with millions from internet subscribers. Tis become a common experience among those opportuning commercial activity by way of the internet. Savvy cyber thieves fishing the elusive cloud for personal financial data with the intent and purpose of transferring assets from your digital wallet and into theirs. They have developed innovative ways and means of evading detection too, while continuing to milk and bilk John and Jane Q for all their worth. Their surname, by the way, is Public. You've heard of John Q Public? Yeah. And what are John and Jane Q's response? Installation of more artificially intelligent computer malware. Frequent and elaborate changes to passwords with which to access digital accounts. Creating dedicated email addresses, but certainly not recoursing to traditional ways and means of transacting business. Ways and means deemed archaic in these days of information technology. Yes, but ways and means that utilize less technology and just maybe provide zero space to middle persons, parentheses, cyber thieves, to practice their inventions of evil. Ways and means that seek to advance and promote old-fashioned trust and honesty rather than suspect mistrust and dishonesty in business relationships with commercial interests. Proclaiming uncompromised truth to help life and death go right at the intersection of faith and culture. And so we conclude where we began, with a collage of scripture portions from Isaiah chapter 14 and Ezekiel 28. While Yahweh was writing about a particular, I won't say person here, he was writing about a particular spirit. These words are also applicable unto another spirit. For thou hast said, and I'm going to tell you something, Yahweh's not afraid. He's not afraid. He knows the ending of every matter from the very conception of it. So he's going to tell you how it's going to end. And cyber technologists, all poo-poo this. Because they're already working on the next super intelligent project. But Yahweh says, for thou hast said, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of Elohim. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like Elyon, the Most High. Thou thoughtest that you were altogether such an one as I, but how art thou created till iniquity was found in thee? And I will cast thee as profane. Thou hast corrupted thy wisdom by reason of thy brightness, intellectual brightness. Therefore will I bring forth the fire from the midst of thee. I can just imagine all this thing just blowing up, can't you? Hopefully not on his head or in his head. But that's the next step, by the way. That's what transhumanism, that's what cyborgism is all about. A marriage. Between, talk about an unequal yoking. A marriage between an electronic brain and this brain that Yahweh has bequeathed to every living creature. Wow. Yes. I will bring forth the fire from the midst of thee. It shall devour thee, and I will bring thee to ashes upon the earth in the sight of all them that behold thee. All they that know thee among the people shall be astonished at thee, and never shalt thou be any more. How art thou, thou which didst weaken the nations, that made the earth to tremble, that didst shake kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness, and destroyed the cities thereof? Yahweh Tzavaot hath sworn, saying, surely as I have thought, so shall it come to pass. And as I have purposed, so shall it stand.